Welcome to the Titanium Economy Podcast, where we showcase leaders from across the industrial sector as they share their valuable experiences, expertise, strategies, and more. These in-depth conversations with the brains behind the businesses lift the lid on how success is cultivated within the titanium economy.
Today, we are honored to have with us Mr. Lee McChesney, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer at MSA Safety. For those who don't know, MSA Safety is a 110-year-old company that has been focused on the same mission of keeping workers across the globe safe and returning home to their families and communities each and every day. Lee joined MSA Safety in October 2022, bringing with him a wealth of experience from a distinguished career in finance and corporate leadership, nearly spanning three decades. Before joining MSA Safety, Lee spent nearly two decades at Stanley Black & Decker, which included several leadership roles in finance and general management, including serving as the president of SPD's hand tools, accessories, and storage business. Lee's career began at United Technologies as an associate in their highly regarded financial management development program. His focus on the success of the business, along with his financial and strategic acumen, has driven significant value creation and sustained operational improvement throughout his career. Lee, we are delighted to have you with us today. Welcome.
No, thank you. Happy to join you.
So Lee, maybe we get started by talking about MSA Safety. Could you start by providing an overview of MSA Safety, its focus areas, products, and end markets to serve?
Yeah, I will do. So again, thank you. So MSA Safety, unique company and someone I'm proud to be a part of here. So 110 years old. So we'll start off with that. But go back to this origins, and I go back there because it's still what fuels us today. So go in 110 years ago, John Ryan Sr. and George Dyke were mine engineers, and they were bothered by the safety and some things that were going on in mines. So they got together with Thomas Edison and helped invent the first flameless light for mines. So basically an electric light that you could wear on your body. And had a substantial reduction in really, the risk of explosions and things like that in mines. So at the time, it really became a passion, and it's still what we follow today, that, if we can keep people safe so that they return home to their families and the communities, we've done a good job. And that is that same vision is what we follow today. We didn't have to, have an offsite and figure out what our purpose was. We know what our purpose is. So fast forward to today. We are focused in three areas. We've decided to spend our time in these areas. We think they're great places to orient. They're definitely towards the more premium, more technology-led side of safety. So really three businesses. The first, I'll say today, is just detection. It's about just over a third of the business today. This is what people could wear, could be attached to a building, could be attached to a ship. It's looking, sniffing, going through the air, looking for, again, things that could be combustible, or things that people shouldn't breathe. So we spend a lot of time in that business. There's a lot of innovation going on there. We also spent, over a third of our business is in the fire services. So this is what a firefighter wears, head, feet, on their body, and what they use to breathe. So in a self-contained breathing apparatus is a key product there, a product we have a leadership position in today. And then finally, industrial PPE. And we have our iconic V-Guard, which you see really all over the world. So we've been in that business for decades, but also we do fall protection systems as well. It's been a focus area for the last 10 years to really build out that business. So it is three unique product areas, which gives us a nice diversity of just really how we participate in the marketplace. A lot of positives to that, but there's also some nice commonality through those businesses we're able to leverage, particularly on the technology, on the connected side. You step back, one thing we've, again, bring it back to the mission, we keep 40 million people safe each and every year. It's a number we really rally the organization around. Again, if we keep focused on keeping people safe, we do that well, we'll get to protect even more. But, we know we make a big impact each and every day. Really, I credit our new CEO, Steve Blanco, or the leaders, the CEOs before them. We really focus these three areas. And today, we are a stronger business than we've ever been.
Actually, I think it's tough to come with a better example of something which could be a good business, but also mission focused in such a way that, yeah, as you said, you don't even need any offsites to get people landing. It's a worthy cause from the start. Thank you, Lee, for that introduction. Lee, one topic I wanted to dig a little deeper on, you mentioned about diversity and how that helps you. I think typical business, at least traditional business, we look at in industrial technology, end up suffering from cyclicality. Could you speak about how the diverse end markets focus kind of helps MSA with that?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's really one of our advantages. So if you, as I said, we have these three businesses, we're in a strong market position, really in all of them, you know, either leading position number one or number two, in really almost all of our businesses, but it is quite diverse. So really you span the economy with maybe the exception of residential construction. We're really participating in all markets. Again, whether it's commercial construction, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's, you know, the creation of energy, the processing of waste, you really see our products. As a result, you know, we are clearly an industrial. We like to talk about being industrial, but we are a bit unique in that we do not have the cyclicality typically that can come with the industrial businesses. So, you know, we talk about mid-single-digit growth as a common goal for us. It's certainly what our track record has shown. But the positive also is we don't swing significantly down in a pressured economic cycle today. So, you know, that fire services business, really, no matter what's going on in the economy, it's usually supported to a high degree. The detection business, you know, yes, the projects are important to us, and certainly, you know, employment counts and things are important to us. But broadly, a large proportion of that is it's installed and it's doing its job, again, no matter what's going on with the economy. So over 60% of our business is very resilient. And then as over the last decade, we've really mixed even more into that. So the industrial PPE business, we love. It's bigger than it was 10 years ago, but as opposed to being, you know, over 40% of our sales today, it's more in the 20s and things like that. And it is an advantage. And it's enabled us, when things have been challenging economically, to still invest in innovation. So, you know, I go back to COVID, I go back to the 2007, 2008 era, we were still investing in innovation because we didn't have to manage such large dramatic swings. And again, to our advantage, and it keeps us, you know, again, continue focused on the mission.
That makes a lot of sense. And Lee, I think that's clear to see in at least MSA's financial performance over the last several years, maybe spanning decades. One question I want to ask you, Lee, was with obviously such a fantastic financial record, the pressure of performing in the future even better always kind of ramps up. I think during your recent Investor Day, you talked about introducing the next phase of strategy to take MSA to its profitable growth or continue on the path of profitable growth. Could you elaborate a little bit on that as to what that next phase entails? What are the key pillars of that strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe I'll even spend a minute just on process as well, too. So as I noted a couple of times here, you know, we are focused on the premium side of safety. We've decided to focus in these three business areas. That was a decision we made over a decade ago with, you know, really a clear strategy. And what we try to do is continually, you know, see where we are in that journey. So we just, you know, we're just going through a process of a CEO transition that's happened. And, you know, leading up to that, we really did a deep dive of what do we say we were going to do 5 years ago and where are we? And it's unique, right? The last 5 years has not been normal. So someone could have said, well, geez, that strategy document you had in 2019, just ignore it and start over. We didn't. We looked back and actually, by and large, we were very much on track, which was great to see, which number one confirms, all right, we picked the right areas. And again, we just talked about resiliency. Well, you couldn't think of a more point where that was helpful and things like that. So we dove into that, but we also found areas where maybe not everything was quite playing out as we expected, and we made some adjustments there. And then we really also stepped back and looked at, you know, the macro and how's that going to play out. So we can go anywhere today. We can talk about AI. We can talk about, you know, mega trends and things like that going on in the industry. We tried to bring all those into the fold. And the takeaway is, hey, again, we're on a good path. So we're going to continue to focus in really being a leader in premium safety solutions, again, following our mission. But we really see some nice innovations that we can bring to market and drive us forward here. They're going to be really accelerators. So, you know, continuing to deliver on this conversion from being a product company to a solutions company, you know, software and really the evolution of providing connected solutions has become part of our journey, but we certainly think that's going to be even more so over time here. You know, that's all part of our driving our recurring revenue business up to a higher percentage than this today through services and solutions. And then, you know, obviously behind all this, again, is this broader connection into connected solutions. You know, we've spent a lot of time standing up our business system. That's, you know, we say we're in the early innings there. So we think that will be a further catalyst to drive really the efficiency and in driving out, you know, I'll say waste, but also identifying, you know, more of the bigger things to focus on that drive even more value. And then one of the other pieces, Greg, was, you know, M&A has been an important part of our journey over the past decade. It's, you know, it's finding the right opportunities and being very disciplined, but we think it's going to be of equal importance or even more so. And the nice thing is our balance sheet has never been stronger as we look forward here. So as you said, you know, the last 10 years has been quite transformational. You know, we've maintained mid-single digit growth despite kind of all the crazy things going on in the world. You know, we've almost doubled our operating margin and we continue to have really a nice strong return on capital employed. And our message is, you know, we're ready for the next 10 years and we know what we need to do. And again, when you have the mission we have, we're not going to get distracted. We're going to focus in those areas. And when we focus on keeping people safe, the business comes with it. And that's a little bit of the subtlety of it really of MSA.
Yeah, I mean, the synergy is actually incredible there, the more we think about it. I think one thing I've noticed about MSA Safety Lean in particular is we do our analysis on our end. We find the companies who kind of beat the indexes, kind of are or not follow the normal lagging kind of performance in which industrials are typically painted with. One of the key characteristics of these companies is they manage cash incredibly well, like at a completely different level. And I think MSA kind of qualifies in the same boat as well as being a company which is maniacal about how you do cash management. You spoke a little bit about introducing the business system and growing it. Crispy shared a little bit more about what that entails and how you manage working capital to keep it at such a high level of performance.
Yeah, it's really important. Well, I mean, I think number one, go back in time. And you know, I think performance with, you know, return on capital employed or, you know, ROIC, you know, whatever version you want to use, there is a high correlation to companies that have, number one, have a high value, number one, respective to their industry, and that they are focused on improving. And, you know, so why there? Well, it talks about control. It talks about driving, you know, sales momentum, talks about really a focus on bringing margin to life. And ultimately, the balance sheet comes with it as well. And are you truly driving it? And not just for a year, but on a sustained basis. So it's always in part of our DNA. It's interesting. You know, the business system is something we talk about more recently, but its origins go back a decade for us. And, you know, it started, you know, with, you know, actually people like Steve. Steve was a head of operations. We had, you know, good processes, but as always, you're never done. There's always more opportunity. He certainly brought it to that team there. And we didn't actually actively talk about it externally, but it really built some nice momentum there. And it's really now spread across the entire organization. And I actually, one of the things I thought was, boy, we should share this message more externally. The numbers are there. The team's been doing it, but we really haven't been sharing it. But I would say the nuance for us is, yes, we're looking for the best practices internally. We're looking for best practices externally, but making sure we do it with the MSA mission in mind. So, you know, one of the things I talk about oftentimes is, yes, we were very focused on inventory, for example, last year, like a lot of companies. A lot of people had gone through the COVID period. Let's just say there was a lot of disruption, a lot of challenges in the supply chain. And, you know, generally people said, well, I'm going to increase my inventory because I just need to because the supply chain's gotten longer and things like that. And we were one of them as well. But, you know, there was, you know, some best practices to bring to life internally and frankly, for some insights from the external world as well. And we brought those to life, but we definitely did them at pace. And one of our key criteria was we are not doing things at the expense of any fill rate. We, you know, in the end, fill rates should go up from this effort, not accept something lower. And it actually led to us being even more focused on delivering sustainable improvements. You see a lot of companies sometimes say, I need to work on inventory and magically next quarter, there's a big change. You didn't see it. It was a gradual improvement. And like, it's a fight. to do PSYOP correctly. You know, the world's challenging, things like that. But bring that information in, rally the organization around it, and then make smart decisions that are, you know, that are good for the here, for example, in 2024, but are also going to put us in a good place for 25. And as I said, we're in the middle phases, whatever you want to say, for deploying of our business system. But the good thing is the team's rallied around lean. I love seeing each quarter, you know, the people's projects that they've certified, that they've, you know, they got bronze or they're going after silver and things like that. It just says that these best practices are making it, you know, further across our 5,000 associates each and every day. But we are doing it again with sustainable mindset. In the end, we'll be happy with the total P&L, but we'll also be happy with the long-term P&L as well, not just what happens in any you know, time period as such.
And that's incredible to hear, Lee, that, I mean, your transformation or this improvement is kind of taking root at the frontline level, not just at the leadership levels. So Lee, speaking of the long-term, maybe we cover a couple of macro aspects. I think we just are coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic wave that clearly heightened awareness of workplace safety. How did that impact MSCA's business, and what long-term changes do you expect in the industry coming out of that?
Yeah, so it's a couple of different ways I can go there. I mean, number one, we're a safety company. You know, our end users, you know, by and large, nothing changed other than they were exposed to, you know, all these risks and things like that. And in many cases, used our products to help stay safe, which was great. We were pretty early as a company. You know, we obviously had some roles we deemed, you know, to be remote work and things like that. But pretty quickly came back to, you know, we need to be in the office more frequently, but we have flexibility. And it, you know, it really depends where you are in the world and what your role is. But by and large, I think it's been a big advantage. And I know when I joined, I saw the linkage that was still there, that, you know, we, you know, it's just a lot easier to have conversations when you bump into people, you know, even a couple times a week, as opposed to, you know, just these virtual sessions. So I think we managed through that as well. And I think the future will be, you know, more of this, you know, flexible hybrid world. So that's okay. But the biggest thing that happened is I think there was even more focus on the safety of employees. And, you know, some companies have been doing this for decades. It's great. You know, those are the companies that we have wonderful partnerships with, but we've also found a lot of, you know, expanded relationships over the last several years. And so number one, I think it's, you know, you don't really see too many companies not talk about the safety of their employees. If you think about some of these regulations and reporting things coming, your companies are going to have to speak about it even more, you know, whether it's what's happening in Europe or something's happening in, you know, other parts of the world. And as we all know, you will not improve safety or you won't improve anything unless you focus on it and then change something. And one of the challenges with safety is, you know, innovating new solutions, but also making it easier for people to use. Because one of the challenges you have with safety products is, you know, people have to use it and you have to make it comfortable. So this, and it's all part of the equation we're trying to solve for in innovation. But yeah, I think what you are seeing, you know, the next evolution of that is, yes, we want people to have the right safety gear on, but this is a really nice positive for our detection business, is how do we, you know, really use data and prevent these incidents from ever occurring? So, you know, one of the things we've done over the last 5 years in particular is really build out a connected platform to use across our business. And, you know, there's going to be a natural evolution of what the adoption rate is in, you know, whether it's a firefighter, whether it's in the industrial PPE space, but certainly in our detection business, particularly the portable side, there's a strong interest in connected solutions. So, you know, we recently, just about 2 years ago, came out with a connected portable monitor. So in the past, you had a monitor, it was, you know, again, it's looking through the air, sniffing, making sure you're not in the dangerous thing. But imagine throughout the day, you go all over the job site. As long as it doesn't, you know, detect contaminants up to a certain level, you know, you come back, all that information is lost. The connected solution today, this is our IO4 connected device, is constantly connected. I know where the worker is. I know when they, you know, they hooked in. I know, you know, what, even the slightest detection it's monitoring at. Imagine I can combine that with my other employees. And, you know, you start figuring out, hey, there's an area here that for some reason there's a higher detection level here. You know, you can imagine that this scenario is there. Just remind, this happens a lot in this, We have a large company testing this device now, and they go into really confined spaces. And this just happened last week. You know, a person felt sick. They thought they had the cold or COVID or something like that. Came back to work the next day because people, you know, need a job. They work hard. They go into these really tough spaces. And the next day, the monitor went way off. But you can imagine that on a larger scale. And that was a dangerous situation. And it wasn't a person wasn't sick, didn't have COVID. There was improper ventilation. And they were exposed to that. So, I mean, there's just, you can see how this is going to evolve. So, yes, the solution from a safety perspective is better. But now let's also think about it from a perspective of how I have all that data that can mine for, you know, future solutions. But I also have record keeping. You know, a lot of today, people are doing all these things manually, recording when they take it in, when they take it out. Today, I can just tap my badge to this in and out. I know when to, you know, do calibration, when I need to, you know, change the sensors out. That's the future. Again, industrial PPE is still going to be really important. If something happens, they got to be safe. But how do we keep workers safe and detect these things so they don't happen? So I think that's going to be certainly a big trend to come. And just the macro environment is also going to be very supportive of really seeing that come to life, maybe even at a faster pace than it would have before. So,
no, it's incredible to see. And I think good to bring this to life. So the examples you talked about, Lee. I'm assuming to bring these products and services to life, Lee, you're bringing in more of this technology angle. You hear about AI today. We hear about digitization, IoT today. Mm-hmm. What's been your learning? Because at least from my vantage point, it feels like a mixed success. Like some companies have done well. A lot of companies have actually also struggled to really embed these kind of technologies in their products and services. So what's been your learning so far on this journey?
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to number one, you know, this, the core of everything we do from an innovation perspective. You know, innovation is how we serve that mission, keeping people safe. It all goes down, and you hear this, you got to actually do it. You can see it in success, is what really provides value for the end users. So I could say, like we just talked about, you know, from a safety perspective, is it clearly this protects them. But if you can also then bring in, the administrative side, you can bring in the productivity. I mean, this is really what the Connected Solutions can do. It can really go into three areas. I think it can't be just a really cool idea that someone's had and you bring to market. And I've done this for a few decades now. I've seen some really exciting things I got all enamored about, but and then they don't go well. And it comes back to, well, did it really solve something for the customer? And then there's usually we solve something for the customer. It's good for your bottom line as well. Or does it also help your bottom line? There could be something there as well. But in the end, that's got to be the key focus. So I think, you know, whether it's new products, whether it's, you know, what does generative AI do and things like that? You know, I'm excited about what they can do. You know, if I bring it back to the finance area, you know, My team today, my teams in the past, they work so hard to get the information, to clean the information. And then there's a portion of time left for the insights, for the analytics. And if we can improve that, you know, I'd rather go faster than slower. And, you know, I've been doing this for a while. I remember when I used to type our numbers into a little machine and, you know, you'd take off your paper and staple it to your, you know, that was a lot of change,
but
we're better for it. So I think this is another example where, you know, it's going to come at different paces. You know, different industries are going to go at different paces here, but, you know, it's lovely to see what's going on in industrial and to imagine where it's going to go. But we see the benefits really coming to all of our three businesses. This is just a case of pace, but again, keep coming back to, it's all about the end user, and does it help your customer? Does it help your distributor? You know, do what they need to do, because then what they're doing is really supporting the entire world, and all the products, all the services are done by people, and we need to keep them safe so they go home each day.
I think that's an excellent motto to keep in mind, that is it solving a problem for your end customer, because I feel that many a times we don't lose sight of that. And to your point, the excitement and enthusiasm kind of takes over. Lee, maybe move a little bit towards your own personal journey and some of the lessons your peers can derive from your experiences. Lee, I think you're one of the very unique senior executives who's had a fantastic career, not just in the financial side, but also in general management. Obviously, you've been in marquee industrial diversified companies like currently MSA, Stanley Black & Decker, and United Technologies. What would be some of the key lessons kind of you've learned which have shaped your leadership style?
And we can spend a good amount of time here. Well, hey, I'll speak from a finance background because that is, you know, the bulk of my career. So number one, you know, I'm a big proponent that, you know, whether you come from the accounting background, you come from the finance perspective, you got to have a business hat on. And, you know, if you are just focused on presenting the numbers, that's fine. But to really be a, you know, a highly valued individual and frankly, to lead a team is, you know, bring it back to the business. How does, you know, how does that information connect with the business? What's the insights from that? How do we change our course forward? And more importantly, in a timely manner. So I spent my whole life, I've been involved in business, you know, accounting and finance became kind of the path in, but I've just seen that and really mix it up. You know, maybe you love commercial, but, you know, go spend time in accounting, go spend time in operations. You know, to be a true senior leader in these areas, you have to kind of be prepared for everything. And I think like one of my best things I ever did is I spent time in operations early in my career. And operations is one of those areas when it goes well, you know, you can almost be a CFO and not know that. But when it doesn't go well, you could be really exposed. I'm very fortunate I got that experience early on. So it's one of the things I try to tell everyone is, because there's always a fear to go into the ops space or the operations finance space. If you want to be, you know, a senior finance leader, go spend time in that space there. Yeah, I think I'll go broader now. I mean, I'm just always looking for best practices, you know, whether that's, you know, I see someone in my organization early in my career, I go spend time with them and figure out what was a takeaway from there. I also see sometimes things that I have to do. But also look outside. Like, there is so many other ideas out there. But do figure out what's right for your company. But, you know, do not stand still. Do not convince yourself that you're different. You have to do it a different way. Continue to evolve. Yes, it's honestly probably been my secret. It's like, I see a good practice and I try to bring it to life in the organization I'm in. And, you know, because the most basic example, if you don't keep changing, don't keep evolving, how are you going to improve? And that's always kind of been my mindset, not to rest on your laurels there. So easier said than done, because, you know, the trick with all of this is you still got to do what you normally do and you got to find time to bring these new things to life. But, you know, it's powerful. And then I would just say, you know, overall, I'm always a big proponent of this. I used to say, you know, make sure you have the facts, not just, you know, don't make decisions based on the loudest voice. Today, we're almost clouded with too many facts. And so that, you know, probably have evolved my answer to say, hey, make sure, you know, you're getting to, you know, filtering through and getting to what really matters and using that to make your decision. And it's honestly that mindset has probably been the biggest thing my entire career, because there's a lot of noise and you got to find a way to filter through that noise and then, you know, make good business decisions. And again, when you can do that, I'll put my finance hat on again, you become an incredible, valuable partner to the business. And, you know, you just become a better finance person because you also understand what's going on in the business more. And it's kind of this increasing loop of knowledge.
It makes a lot of sense, Lee. Thank you so much for those insights. Lee, one other thing I wanted to call out was, I know M&A is a big topic for industrial companies. I think depending on what study you look at, 2 out of 3, 4 out of 5 mergers and acquisitions end up going to not the path which it was intended initially. You have nearly 40 mergers and acquisitions under your belt, and you've played leadership roles in several of them. What's your approach to M&A and integration? Like, how does one kind of stay to the more greener side of that outcome rather than the red side?
Yeah. Well, hey, I've been fortunate. I've been part of several businesses where I think M&A is playing a role. You know, thing number one comes down to, how does M&A help your respective business? How does it, you know, not just, you know, not all. You have to have a really good discipline of where will M&A play. So that's number one. So I think, you know, I've learned how to do that well. You know, I can't say every one of those deals hit a filter, but I've learned how to do that. You obviously have to have great diligence. Can't fall in love, you know, whether it's M&A, a house, a car, you can't fall in love with any of those items. You got to go through and have good diligence and make sure it's what you think it is. And then obviously, you know, what I found is very helpful is the people involved in the diligence have to have a role in the executions. Too simply, you know, some groups split it. I think it's really important to bring, you know, a lot of overlap between that, because it's a lot easy, really easy to come up with ideas of what you're going to do. Another thing to go do them. So making sure the same people are involved has been helpful. With that said, again, your right to do M&A comes from running the core business well. You know, if you're not running the core business well, I'd say generally don't add M&A on. There's exceptions to that, but generally, you know, you're running your business well, it gives you the checkbook to go do the other deals. Conversely, once you've done the M&A, do not get overly distracted by what you've purchased. You got to make sure the core is protected, and whether that's, you know, the way you run the businesses, the way you allocate resources, people, dollars, make sure you're supporting both. Because in the end, the equation is about both of them performing, not one or the other. Again, I think if you use that filter to make decisions, you know, typically you won't get over your skis either on, you know, running the core or in terms of what you do in the M&A space.
Well, thank you so much. That's incredible to hear coming from you, because I think on the face of it, they sound very simple, but having the discipline to be able to do it on a day-to-day basis and on deals which are multi-billion dollars is sometimes tough to maintain. So appreciate that. So Lee, maybe coming to the final question I have for you. In the book we wrote, Titanium Economy, we were arguing that the industrial sector is misunderstood, undervalued, underappreciated. But there is this sector which kind of... subsector with industrial, I think MSA is a part of that, given the performance they have shown, which we are calling the titanium economy, as a contrary to the rust belt connotation we associate with industrials. And we urge there again, investors look at the segment differently, think about the value it adds and the true long-term value, both for the industry as well as the economy as a whole. So what is your take on the outlook for the sector and how should investors and other stakeholders think about this?
No, I think, number one, the concept is right on track that you have. It's interesting. I mean, on the surface, if you know, you go to a cocktail party and you say you work at this industrial company, it doesn't have the same reaction as a consumer products company, for example. But if you step back and look at the industrials and look at what they've done on a, you know, 3, 5, and 10-year basis, you know, they're driving the economy. And if you run those businesses well, you typically have a very healthy relationship with your end users, and one that, you know, is more of a medium and a long-term version, not one that's kind of tied to some type of fad or something like that. So again, you control a lot of your own destiny. You know, probably just like you are, if there's one thing I try to share with you people younger in their career, is to look in the industrial space. Again, if you run your business well, you know, the business will thrive and you'll get the opportunity to do that on a sustained basis. And so I think if you look at history, I mean, I'll look at our history, you know, over the last 10 years, the world's been incredibly volatile, but we've really persevered through that. But if you look at a lot of industrials, you know, there's some that have done it as well. Again, ones that run their business well, you know, you have, you know, you control your own destiny, as I said earlier. So I think the premise is right. As I look forward, I think it's going to be even more important. So, you know, the concept of an industrial with technology helping really accelerate its rate of improvement. We're certainly in the early stages of that as well. And you can certainly see some other, you know, kind of high class performing peers doing the same as well. So my advertising, again, go share the story with as many people as possible, because I think you help influence people into careers that can last decades of success.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that's spirit, Lee. Thank you so much for taking the time, because I think your words carry a lot more weight to people who are listening. So appreciate you at least sharing your story and MSA's message with us. Thank you so much for your time, Lee, today.
Hey, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you for listening to the Titanium Economy Podcast. To learn more, share feedback, and stay up to date, please visit titaniumeconomy.com.